Penguin Random House Audio presents Dictator by Robert Harris. Read for you by David Rintoul.
Author's note. Dictator tells the story of the final 15 years in the life of the Roman statesman Cicero, imagined in the form of a biography written by his secretary, Tiro. That there was such a man as Tiro, and that he wrote such a book, are well-attested historical facts. Born a slave on the family estate, he was 3 years younger than his master, but long outlived him, surviving, according to St. Jerome, until he reached his 100th year. "Your services to me are beyond count," Cicero wrote to him in 50 BC. "In my home and out of it, in Rome and abroad, in private affairs and public, in my studies and literary work." Tiro was the first man to record a speech in the Senate verbatim, and his shorthand system, known as Note Tironiae, was still in use in the church in the 6th century. Indeed, some traces of it, the ampersand symbol for and, the abbreviations etc., NB, IE, EG, survive to this day. He also wrote several treatises on the development of Latin. His multi-volume Life of Cicero is referred to as a source by the first-century historian Asconius Pedianus. Plutarch cites it twice, but like the rest of Tiro's literary output, the book disappeared amid the collapse of the Roman Empire. What must it have been like, one wonders? Cicero's life was extraordinary, even by the hectic standards of the age. From relatively lowly origins compared to his aristocratic rivals, and despite his lack of interest in military matters, deploying his skill as an orator and the brilliance of his intellect, he rose at meteoric speed through the Roman political system, until, against all the odds, he finally was elected consul at the youngest permitted age of 42. There followed a crisis-stricken year in office, 63 BC, during which he was obliged to deal with a conspiracy to overthrow the Republic led by Sergius Catilina. To suppress the revolt, the Senate, under Cicero's presidency, ordered the execution of 5 prominent citizens, an episode that haunted his career ever afterwards. When subsequently the 3 most powerful men in Rome, Julius Caesar, Pompey the Great, and Marcus Crassus, joined forces in a so-called triumvirate to dominate the state, Cicero decided to oppose them. Caesar, in retaliation, using his powers as chief priest, unleashed the ambitious aristocratic demagogue Clodius, an old enemy of Cicero's, to destroy him. By allowing Clodius to renounce his patrician status and become a plebeian, Caesar opened the way for his election as tribune. Tribunes had the power to haul citizens before the people, to harass and persecute them. Cicero swiftly decided he had no choice but to flee Rome. It is at this desperate point in his fortunes that Dictator begins. My aim has been to describe, as accurately as I can within the conventions of fiction, the end of the Roman Republic as it might have been experienced by Cicero and Tiro. Wherever possible, the letters and speeches and descriptions of events have been drawn from the original sources. Robert Harris, Kintbury, 8th June 2015. The melancholy of the antique world seems to be more profound than that of the moderns, all of whom more or less imply that beyond the dark void lies immortality. But for the ancients, that black hole was infinity itself. Their dreams loom and vanish against a background of immutable ebony. No crying out, no convulsions, nothing but the fixity of a pensive gaze. Just when the gods had ceased to be, and the Christ had not yet come, there was a unique moment in history, between Cicero and Marcus Aurelius, when man stood alone. Nowhere else do I find that particular grandeur. Gustave Flaubert, Letter to Madame Roger de Jeunette, 1861. Alive, Cicero enhanced life. So can his letters do, if only for a student here and there, taking time away from belittling despairs, to live among Virgil's togaed people, desperate masters of a larger world. D.R. Shackleton Bailey, Cicero, 1971. Part 1. Exile, 58 BC to 47 BC. Nasere autem quid ante quam natus sis acciderit, id est semper esse puerum. Quid enim est aetas hominis, nisi ea memoria rerum veterum, cum superiorum aetate contextitur. To be ignorant of what occurred before you were born is to remain always a child. For what is the worth of human life, unless it is woven into the life of our ancestors by the records of history? Cicero, Orator, 46 BC. Chapter 1. I remember the cries of Caesar's war horns chasing us over the darkened fields of Latium, their yearning, keening howls like animals on heat, and how, when they stopped, there was only the slither of our shoes on the icy road and the urgent panting of our breath. It was not enough for the immortal gods that Cicero should be spat at and reviled by his fellow citizens, not enough that in the middle of the night he be driven from the hearths and altars of his family and ancestors, not enough even that, as we fled from Rome on foot, he should look back and see his house in flames. To all these torments, they deemed it necessary to add one further refinement, that he should be forced to hear his enemy's army striking camp on the field of Mars. Even though he was the oldest of our party, Cicero kept up the same fast pace as the rest of us. Not long ago he had held Caesar's life in the palm of his hand. He could have crushed it as easily as an egg. Now their fortunes led them in entirely opposite directions. While Cicero hurried south to escape his enemies, the architect of his destruction marched north to take command of both provinces of Gaul. He walked with his head down, not uttering a word, and I imagined it was because he was too full of despair to speak. Only at dawn, when we rendezvoused with our horses at Bovillae and were about to embark on the second stage of our escape, did he pause with his foot in the doorway of his carriage and say suddenly, "Do you think we should turn back?" The question caught me by surprise. "I don't know," I said. "I hadn't considered it." "Well, consider it now. Tell me, why are we fleeing Rome?" "Because of Clodius and his mob." "And why is Clodius so powerful?" "Because he's a tribune and can pass laws against you." "And who made it possible for him to become a tribune?" I hesitated. "Caesar." "Exactly. Caesar. Do you imagine that man's departure for Gaul at that precise hour was a coincidence?" "Of course not. He waited till his spies had reported I'd left the city before ordering his army to move. Why? I'd always assumed his advancement of Clodius was to punish me for speaking out against him. But what if his real aim all along was to drive me out of Rome? What scheme requires him to be certain I've gone before he can leave too?" I should have grasped the logic of what he was saying. I should have urged him to turn back. But I was too exhausted to reason clearly. And, if I am honest, there was more to it than that. I was too afraid of what Clodius's thugs might do to us if they caught us re-entering the city. So, instead, I said, "It's a good question, and I can't pretend I have the answer, but wouldn't it look indecisive, after bidding goodbye to everyone, suddenly to reappear? In any case, Clodius has burned your house down now. Where would we return to? Who would take us in? I think you'd be wiser to stick to your original plan and get as far away from Rome as you can." He rested his head against the side of the carriage and closed his eyes. In the pale grey lights, I was shocked by how haggard he appeared after his night on the road. His hair and beard had not been cut for weeks. He was wearing a toga dyed black. Although he was only in his 49th year, these public signs of mourning made him look much older, like some ancient, mendicant, holy man. After a while he sighed. "I don't know, Tiro. Perhaps you're right. It's so long since I slept. I'm too tired to think any more." And so the fatal error was made. More through indecision than decision, and we continued to press on southwards for the remainder of that day, and for the 12 days that followed, putting what we thought was a safe distance between ourselves and danger. We traveled with a minimal entourage to avoid attracting attention.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?